Success. Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation. Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses. The fraud, the messer with me. Come on. In a court of law, I took on the United States of America, and I kicked her ass. I took on WCW, and it took me a while, but I kicked their asses. Live through my music, yeah. Not because I was an asshole, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah.
P-P-A, no info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement.
Welcome again to another episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. I'm your host, Jambalaya Jake. On the last episode, I was joined by Sean Kidd, and we spoke about the historic departure of Stone Cold Steve Austin. And so in this one, we're going to kind of get into the follow-up to that, as it is still obviously not an issue that has subsided. But I have a first-time guest on the show who has never been on the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. He is one of my teammates on the Highway to the Impact Zone over on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. And he is also the second member of the tag team of the, I'll call them the Mud Pie Express, the Mississippi Mud Pie Express. And that is Mr. Lewis Maynard. What's up, Lewis?
Not much. I'm very excited to be on the show.
Yeah. So, Lewis, I have, and I hope you don't take offense to this, but so we obviously do the TNA podcast, and we've, you know, watch wrestling, do live watches and all kind of other stuff, but you have one of the most interesting, I always call it the wrestling prism to me. And it's kind of like when I think of people, you know, it's a lot of it's based on age and other factors, but it's always just kind of how I think of how people see wrestling and, you know, what stuff they've watched and sort of, and that to me, that's like their prism. And to me, you have a very interesting prism, because as usual on this podcast, I always ask people, what is their, you know, where were they at as a wrestling fan at this time period? And we are not that far off in age, but I'm always interested by your wrestling viewing, because, like, for one, you always say, like, you've really not watched much WCW and stuff. But
right.
my understanding is that during this period, you were pretty locked in. And so was this, like, I guess my overall thing I'm getting to is that, like, was this the first, like, this period of WWE is, like, is this when you're really getting into wrestling?
Yeah, so back in 2001 was the first wrestling match I actually remember watching, and it was like January 2001. I was flipping through TV channels at my, I think, uncle's house or something, uncle and aunt's house, and an episode of WWE was on, and it was Triple H was champion, and they were doing a lottery, a like lotto wheel spinning around to see who was going to face him that night for the title, and it was Rikishi. So the first main event I ever watched of WWE was an episode of, I'm pretty sure it was SmackDown, Triple H versus Rikishi for the WWE Championship. And after that, I was like, okay, WWE's kind of cool. Wrestling's kind of cool. But it wasn't for another year and a half before I actually started trying to get in and watch weekly. So about 2002, 2003 was when I started getting into it, and that rolled into when TNA started in 2004, which is when I was watching every episode of Raw, SmackDown, and TNA every week, and I was hooked from that point on. But it was kind of a weird intersection because it had about 2 years of WWE in, and then TNA came along, and that's when I really started picking up wrestling.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's kind of interesting because I think most people within our group of, you know, wrestling fans, kind of the two that always come up are sort of WWE and WCW. So it's interesting to me that like the two that are kind of in your wheelhouse are TNA and WWE, or like 2000s WWE. So always a fun part of having different people on this pod is just to see different perspectives and, you know, where everybody was at as fans and stuff. So, yeah, that's very interesting. So we'll get into it. But so as always on this show, the first thing I get into before we dive into the actual shows is I go through the news and notes, what was cracking the dirt sheets, as they say in the biz. So these are all from Meltzer. But obviously, myself and Sean on the last episode covered all of the we tried to keep it as brief as we could because it's sort of a well-known story. But Austin walking out.
Right.
And so a lot of these notes are about kind of Dave sort of following up on, you know, the week after this breaking news. So we talked about it last episode, but they taped a big episode of Confidential where the main topic on it was, you know, Austin walking out, which is kind of interesting because just for them to react to it that quickly and have it out in the ether that quickly of how they feel about this is, I feel, pretty unprecedented in wrestling, at least for WWE, of, you know, responding to some big moment like this. It would be like whenever, you know, the Montreal Screwjob happened, if there was like a full on like you know, 30-minute segment on the Montreal Screwjob. Like, I know Vince addressed it when it happened, but it's pretty crazy to just think that in 2002, Vince and, you know, JR are shooting on Austin leaving within a week of it happening. But so as Meltzer says, they taped interviews for it for Confidential, and they basically buried Austin. And he puts a lot of emphasis on that JR particularly buried Austin a lot in this, considering how close of friends they are and everything like that. And basically, you know, JR saying that that Austin turned his back on the fans, that he betrayed kids and all this sort of stuff, and then the company that made him rich, and that, you know, WWE invested so much in Austin only for, like, him to turn his back on them, so on and so forth, as it were. Since you weren't on the last one, do you have any thoughts, Lewis, on this whole incident with Austin leaving?
Well, I just thought it was the Confidential was amazing that they would go in with JR and have JR bury Austin. And I have to think that JR had to backstage have called Austin before that and asked like his permission to do that, because JR and Austin, it comes up more in these shows that we're about to go through, but they are very close friends outside of the company. So for JR to do that shoot interview on him, I would have to assume that he had talked to Austin beforehand and he just wasn't going out and burying him like that, because Austin was probably the main reason, if not in the top three, that WWE beat WCW. So I get that you're mad that Austin walked out, but at the same time, Austin needed a break. He was running ragged. He was carrying the company on his shoulders for so long. He needed a break. He could have gone about it certainly a better way than just walking out when he was supposed to lose to Brock. But, you know, when you've been going so long as the top guy and everything's on your shoulders for so long, I can see how that can get to somebody and wear them out and get them to the point where they just need to walk away for a minute.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned it, and Meltzer gets into it in this issue, but, you know, I think it's always kind of up in the air as far as, you know, who's the top drawing guy ever, but at least in this issue, and, you know, it could be recency bias when he wrote it, but he kind of mentions in this Observer that Austin is like the highest drawing guy ever, and and he kind of gets into it. I never really thought about it this way, but you know, obviously Hogan drew huge houses and stuff, but he thinks of it as in a broader picture. But Austin is kind of what brought them into being a publicly traded company, which is a huge deal and made them a billion-dollar company. So for, you know, what you, you know, obviously Hogan was huge in the 80s and stuff, but it's hard to argue with Austin's success in bringing them up to the level that they are today, where they're more of, instead of just like this family-owned company, they're this huge corporate kind of monolith.
Yeah, and then the other interesting thing out of this is this episode of Raw coming up actually kind of shows us the person that's going to be the new Austin and be the new person that everyone in the country recognizes, and that's going to be The Rock. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a – I don't know if it was just perfect place, perfect time for him, because this was the time when Scorpion King was coming out and he was trying to break into Hollywood, and Austin walking out left a big hole to be filled by somebody to be the face of the company. And mm-hmm. Rock just swooped in, and the rest is history there.
Yeah. And so speaking of that, to transition, so he mentions, Meltzer mentions that The Rock, so Rock has been out for a couple months at this point. He was around when I first started the pod, but pretty soon after he kind of, he dipped out to do Scorpion King, mm-hmm. but he recently returned to do a house show in Honolulu, Hawaii, which Meltzer says sold out in basically record time. Within 2 hours, it was sold out, and it made a ton of money. It was sort of his return, at least for in-ring, even if it was on TV. But and even to this day, I think Rock has done an interview recently in the last year or so where he said that he considers that show one of the biggest of his career to you know, to be that big. And, you know, obviously he has connections to Hawaii and then Hawaii area with his family and stuff. Mm-hmm. And another fun fact about that is that apparently Bruce Willis was at the show, and he was involved in the Rock's match, which is kind of random. But besides that, so we have a few other notes. At the latest WWE tapings in Atlanta, Dusty Rhodes is backstage visiting, introducing his 16-year-old son, Cody Rhodes, to everyone, and said that Cody had been training with his father to be a wrestler. So I guess we'll see if anything ever comes of him. You know,
this Cody Rhodes character, we should look out for him.
Yeah, I wonder if he'll ever get a neck tattoo or anything. But and also Rey Mysterio, not for TV purposes, but Rey Mysterio also made his WWE debut at a house show in San Diego, beating Chavo Guerrero. He was wearing his mask again, which is crazy to think that there was a point where he didn't wear his mask, but that's WCW.
Yeah.
And he was apparently extremely impressive on the show. Dave says he was the most impressed with him that he'd seen of anybody in WWE in quite some time. And so, and also notes that he looked significantly bigger than he did when he was at WCW. And Dave kind of chalks that up to, you know, that's WWE for you. You need to be big. Some big names being discussed. But, yeah, I assume, I know Ray's coming in pretty soon. I know he's at SummerSlam 2002, so he should be in here soon, which kind of will add to their just insane amount of star power that they have right now in this era.
For sure. And like, even now at this day, like when I think back to my like favorite WWE roster, it is this kind of like 2002 through 2005 time period. Just because of all the names and all the personalities that just stand out to me from this time period more than any other.
Yeah, and we've talked about it previously, but it's just sort of, it's kind of how they're getting by right now in this period of flux and transition, is that maybe their ideas and the creative are not the greatest in the world, but when you just have this much talent and this great of performers, it's hard to be like super shitty when you just have this many people.
For sure.
When you're just loaded, you know. But all right, so on that, that will wrap up the news and notes, and we will dive right into Raw, which would be the June 17, 2002 Raw. And so both episodes we're talking about are going to be the go-home episodes leading into King of the Ring 2002. So we get a recap to start off of Booker T getting kicked out of the NWO last week as Shawn Michaels super kicked him. and we get a lot of hype that we're going to hear the real story of Stone Cold. And they show clips of, you know, the Confidential show that we mentioned a minute ago. But our opener, we come right out of the gate with a match, which is kind of rare on Raw because we usually start with a long-ass promo. And we get X-Pac versus RVD, which will be a King of the Ring quarterfinal match, I should say. So we come out with these two, a pretty hot match on paper between two pretty notable guys. We get an early advantage from X-Pac to start. He does his suck a chance and whatnot. RVD kind of takes over. RVD hits a sick acai moonsault, I should say, if I'm going to say the JR way, by RVD. X-Pac, they come back in, and X-Pac starts wearing down RVD. He tosses him out, and then X-Pac sort of hits his own cool high spot outside of the ring when he hits kind of a plancha that looked pretty good. He goes for the Bronco Buster. He misses that. And so RVD starts working on his comeback, but then he gets drop kicked out of the ring. So while the ref goes out to check on him, which that was a little bit of a weak distraction to distract the ref here, but not the worst I've seen. Obviously, we know Lewis from TNA. It's not the worst ref distraction we've ever seen. But while he's outside the ring, Booker comes in, hits the bookend to kind of get his revenge on X-Pac and the NWO, which allows RVD to come in and hit the five-star frog splash. I thought this was a pretty good opener. I always like when X-Pac gets a chance to work with a guy who can kind of go up to his level and he can kind of show the stuff they could do. Like that plancha was really nice. Because X-Pac, even, you know, obviously people don't like him that much at this point. He gets a X-Pac sucks chance during this match and stuff like that. So they don't like him that much as a person, but the guy can still wrestle for damn sure. And he kind of gets to show a little bit more than he normally does going against RVD. RVD was great as usual. He's been kind of a highlight of these shows as I've gone through. I went 2 stars on this one, Lewis. What'd you think?
Similar feelings there. I bumped it up a little bit. I went 2.5 because I thought it had some cool spots. And I always love the RVD OMG moment when he does the spinning. He puts X-Pac on the barricade and does that spinning leg drop from the apron to the barricade. That's always a fun RVD spot to see in a match. The five-star frog splash he hit at the end was pretty impressive because X-Pac was a good distance away from the turnbuckle he was on. And then Booker getting some sweet revenge helped boost up the rating of the match a little bit for me, just storyline-wise. So I went 2.5 with it. The one thing for me is I know X-Pac is a good wrestler. I fully understand this, but X-Pac, the character, is just always annoyed me. And it comes through. It comes through a lot in the backstage segments coming up tonight, but I've just never been a fan of X-Pac, the character.
Yeah, here he's definitely, like you said, we'll get to it pretty soon, but he's very whiny. Yeah, for sure. I could totally see why people were sick of him. But it's like it makes you wish that he could have got it together as a character because he really is talented in the ring. But pretty hot opener, like I said, because considering majority of the time you get a very long promo segment. So it's fun to come out with sort of a hot match. But as it were, RVD will advance in the King of the Ring tournament. We continue on and we get a clip from Confidential that was mentioned at the start of the show. And the main thing I took from this was the few highlights from this were that JR kind of compares Austin to John Wayne becoming a coward, which again, it's like a pretty big deal for JR to be calling him a coward, given their relationship and who Austin was to the company. Yeah. And this is within, 10 or so days of him leaving the company. So it's pretty harsh words. And they ask him if Austin will ever be back on Raw. And he says that he would not be. And I never really realized, I definitely remember watching Confidential at the time and seeing this segment, but I didn't really remember that they had pushed it this hard on TV, had pushed that this was on Confidential as much on TV. That was kind of, a surprise to me.
Yeah. I mean, I get it though. Cause like this is what everyone, you can't really like shy away from the fact that Austin's not here. You gotta just kind of hit it on the head and get it out there and be like, yeah, he's gone. And this is why.
Yeah, and you could argue this is their most controversial thing that's going on behind the scenes since the Montreal Screwjob. So they kind of looked into it a bit with Confidential because that was sort of their big, you know, their big show to open Confidential. And then they kind of just fell into this. So they're like, well, we might as well just keep the ball rolling and just talk about this shit.
Yeah, because I mean, like, this was still obviously a little before I was fully watching WWE week to week. So going back, I had kind of had to remind myself that Austin was gone for a little bit. But if you jump forward a decade, it's the same kind of thing that we see later on with CM Punk. And I definitely remember the CM Punk storyline very well. So it's interesting to see how over time these things kind of repeat themselves, where you have clearly the top guy in the company at the time just walking away for a little bit, needing some time away from probably Vince and his decision making.
Yeah, especially given that's an interesting corollary, considering, you know, obviously Punk was a big Austin fan, and there's always been a lot of comparisons between those two. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was wearing the Austin t-shirt during the pipe bomb segment, so.
Yeah.
It all just kind of came back full circle there.
Yeah. But to your point earlier, Lewis, we head backstage and we have X-Pac, who's pissed off and whining and says that he wants Booker T later in the night. And then we head to the ring and we have Vince in the ring to come out, and he is speaking about Austin's departure. He says that Austin is gone and says that he hopes Austin comes back, but he doesn't know what's going to happen, which is interesting because when you look at the Confidential stuff, they kind of bury him. But then Vince comes out here and sort of says, you know, that he'd be willing to take him back here, which I thought was a little bit, you know, contrast to what they say on Confidential, they would be willing to take him back, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, they definitely could have. I think they're like, the order they put these things in was a little weird, because the JR interview first said that JR thought Austin will never be back on Raw. And then you have Vince coming out trying to coax him back. So, like, if you go with the understanding that Austin's at least going to be out a few weeks, maybe if you're going to at least dig into the Austin stuff for storyline purposes, space it out a little. Do the begging Austin to come back stuff with Vince first. Then next week, when it's starting to sink in that Austin's going to be gone for a bit, have JR come out and say, I can't believe you're doing this to the company, Austin. Like, that kind of stuff. Just build it over some time if you know that he's going to be gone for a bit.
Yeah, and it sort of feels, as you get more into it, with how much time they dedicate to it, you could sort of see that it could be a storyline, I think, if you're just someone watching. You know, I think it's hard to imagine in retrospect that it would be a storyline, because y'all know it's true.
Yeah.
But as much time they give to it in the show and the way it's sort of handled, you could almost think that it could be a work shoot sort of thing. But he says that Austin has to explain and apologize. And then he talks about how Austin actually did this after Mania, but he forgave him. So that Austin walked out for a couple weeks after Mania and was burnt out. And he kind of let him come back, which is true. And these are all pretty big. I can only imagine if you were somebody who was like reading the Wrestling Observer at the time and reading about all this stuff that Meltzer saying, and then Vince comes out and sort of addresses it here. It must be a little surreal, because this kind of stuff, I know Russo had been known for, you know, work shoots and all that kind of stuff, but I think in this era, it still wasn't the most common thing to mention things that were this behind the scenes as part of a storyline. But he pretty much says that Austin owes everyone an apology. They have to move on without him and develop new stars, which I think a lot of people would say that they have not done. But
yeah.
But then he says that the King of the Ring winner will be the number one contender, and kind of ties that into all of this, that they have to. He definitely paints it as they're transitioning at this point, and that, you know, and I guess it's like kudos to them for being able to integrate this into the storylines like this, to make it, you know, well, King of the Ring is going to be number one contender, to basically make it where in real life they're in a transition period, and then sort of bring that into the actual story that's going on the show, that they're in transition. But anyway, to wrap up the segment, he thanks Austin, and then he gets a Budweiser and drinks in the ring as sort of an homage to Austin. But what did you think about this overall, Lewis, as an in-ring promo and, you know, the whole integration of the Austin stuff into the storyline?
So, I mean, I thought it was unique for Vince to be the one giving this promo with all the history between him and Austin storyline-wise. Basically, giving Austin the character that he's most known for, being the working class guy that beats the shit out of his boss. So for Vince to be the one to come out here in front of the fans and say, look, regardless of what storyline things have gone on in the past with us, you know, you owe more to these fans than just walk out like this. And you need to come back, talk to me, but more importantly, talk to these fans and let's get past this. So it was an interesting side of Vince to see just him coming out and directly talking to one superstar in particular, that being Stone Cold, and trying to somewhat clean the air, but also somewhat put Austin kind of, I don't want to say in his place, because I mean, his place is the top guy in the company, but put Austin in more of a mindset like, the company is more than you. We have dozens and dozens and dozens of guys on this roster that need a leader in the locker room. So come back and be that guy.
Yeah, it definitely felt to me like him almost coming out and cutting a promo to the fans and almost telling them, like, you know, all right, we're transitioning. You know, things are changing. He's gone, and we have new people we want to push. And, you know, for him to say develop new stars, which is almost a weird comment for, you know, it's kind of a shoot comment in itself to say, you know, develop new stars, because it definitely alludes to them being the ones who sort of push people and create these stars.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was definitely interesting to see, but it was definitely captivating for sure. Like, I was interested in what he had to say, and it was interesting to see him, you know, not completely bury Austin and do the whole drinking the beer in honor of him. And it definitely seemed really, like he cooled off a bit
from the previous week. Mm-hmm. He tried to walk the fence with it and kind of not go too far one way or the other. He didn't want to beg Austin to come back, but he didn't want Austin to think this is something that you're just going to be able to do whenever you want, kind of thing.
Yeah. But it won't be the last time this comes up. So we'll carry on to the show. Our next match will be Raven versus Jeff Hardy. So this wasn't a super long match, as we don't get many of those on these shows, but I thought this was a nice back and forth match. Pretty standard stuff. You know, Jeff gets worn down in the beginning. He sort of makes his comeback. And the biggest probably thing happening here was that Taker was on the outside sort of watching. Mm-hmm. He didn't interfere or anything, but he's just kind of ominously standing in the back by the ramp, not getting involved, but you kind of liked him doing that, not getting involved. But as it was, nothing, you know, too notable as a match, but it was a good back and forth match. Jeff ends up winning with this Swanton. I went 2 stars on it. I thought it was pretty fun.
I bumped it up a little. I went 3 stars on it, and it was because It was mainly because this is the Jeff Hardy that I love to see. And where we are, if people are listening along with Highway to the Impact Zone, where we are in Impact right now, Raven's kind of flustered out, not really competing the same way he used to be able to in the ring. And Jeff Hardy in TNA at this point, where we're in Highway to the Impact Zone, is not a physically and mentally prepared Jeff Hardy that we know and love. So to be able to kind of pop 2 years back into the past and watch this Jeff Hardy and Raven was a fun little just look back into the past for me. And it was a really fluid Jeff Hardy hitting all his spots nicely. And that Swanton at the end was I don't even know if it was a stiff Swanton or if Raven just kind of sold it pretty well, but it was one of the better Swantons I remember seeing from this version of Jeff Hardy. And then this Undertaker watching on, building this kind of storyline with Undertaker and the Hardys more, will pay off later on down the road in an exciting way.
Yeah, I thought it was some good restraint to have Taker to have not have him interfere, you know, to because it reminds you of what's going on, let you know that there's a feud building between them, but without him actually doing anything. But yeah, I thought Raven and Jeff Hardy worked really well together in this match, for sure. It was a good little solid TV match, but
we
continue on. So we head backstage, and we have Booker T backstage, and he is addressed by Goldust, who is dressed as the Duke of Gold. He has some absurd fake teeth that look like the I remember when you go to, like, when I was a little bit younger, you go to, like, the grocery store, and they had the machine where you put the quarter in and get, like, you know, random cheap ass toys and stuff. And I always remember they had one was like the Billy Bob teeth or whatever. And that's sort of what this reminded me of. Goldust with his ridiculous fake teeth. He tells him that he wants to serve in Booker's court. And he says, you need to trust me because I did warn you about HBK. So he is right on that one. And by the end of it, Booker's sort of getting on the same page as Goldust. And then they get on the topic of Booker T facing Brock tonight. And Booker T gets fired up and says that Brock will get his ass whooped. I always kind of I've been enjoying these segments between them because they have good chemistry. It's a nice contrast. And I think Goldust is so good at these kind of weird comedy segments.
Oh yeah, this was fantastic. This is everything I love about comedic Goldust, especially bouncing off of the, like, more serious Booker T right now to try to focus on winning this King of the Ring tournament. And then we also get a little foreshadowing for later in Booker T's career when he talks about being King Booker. I like the sound of that. So
yeah.
That was a nice little thing to hear and be like, oh yeah, well, in a few years.
Yeah, I thought about that too. It was kind of crazy to me to hear, like, you know, his court, like Goldust lobbying to be in his court. And I was like, man, that's a few years away, but it's already kind of, you know, it makes you wonder sometimes if they kind of put this stuff on the back burner and like, oh, that sounds good. We'll do that later.
But yeah, with a lot of stuff, when they try to, when WWE right now tries to force comedy, it doesn't always come across that great. I mean, the Street Profits are great at it, but a lot of people aren't. But Goldust is one of those guys that's always just been so spot on with doing comedy in backstage segments.
Yeah, because you don't get the sense when he does it. You definitely get a sense of his personality and him as a performer, which I think is, like what you're saying, that's lacking sometimes and what we see nowadays, for sure. But speaking of things that are lacking and that are not good, like the segment we just saw, we head to Coach, who is somewhere else backstage, and he's trying to get comments from Molly, and he finds her doing squats. He asks her about Trisha's comments, and she says that she is offended. But she says that she had the last lap basically because she beat her and that she is going to become women's champion. Coach makes a stupid comment about her ass or something, or that she's going to be the butt of the joke or some. I didn't even write down what it was. So she slaps the shit out of him. And my thing with this, and I keep going on, and it's only going to get worse, is that to me, and I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of this too much with modern eyes or something, but I think even at the time, this kind of makes Molly to seem like more of a face. I don't know. What do you think, Liz?
No, that was my thing. I was trying to figure out who was the heel here, Trish or Molly. And it kind of feels like it's supposed to be Molly because normally the faces aren't, like, made fun of in the backstage segments like this where you walk up and she's doing the Thigh Master trying to work off some pounds or whatever. But, yeah, it was just kind of confusing as to what's the storyline here right now. Why does it really matter to me that Molly Holly has a fat ass?
Yeah, I think it's a thing you see even with, you know, as I'm watching these, it doesn't manifest in the same way with the guys who are heels, but I think it's something that they're kind of stuck on with their heels, is that they always want to make the heels the butt of the joke rather than make them seem kind of dominant or let the faces look bad. And so here, like you said, it's sort of like you know, I don't know if I'm supposed to feel bad for Molly or not, because they're just making fun of her for a dumbass reason. And so it's like, I kind of feel sympathy for her, and you shouldn't be making me feel sympathy for your heels, which is odd, but, we'll come back to it soon. So we cut again to another backstage promo with Heyman speaking with NWO. He tells them politely to stay out of Brock's match tonight with Booker T, even though they want to get, you know, obviously they have a, they want to get revenge on Booker T for screwing over X-Pac earlier tonight. X-Pac tells Heyman that he thinks it sounds like a threat. Heyman gets upset. And then HBK takes exception to it, and they kind of have a stare down between HBK and Brock. And then they have even longer stare down with Nash and Brock, which was kind of a, you know, I think early in Brock's career, these are kind of big moments for him to have a stare down with Nash, who's a big name, obviously. But yeah, this was a fun enough segment, you know, to build the tension between the two groups.
Yeah, no, as far as the backstage segments go for Raw, this was my favorite one, just because Heyman's always good on the mic and just getting in all the NWO's faces about it, and then the just side-to-side stare-downs of Brock staring at Sean, then Nash pushing Sean aside and staring at Brock, and then all the other NWO people coming up to stare at Brock. It really did two things. It made NWO look like, hey, Brock, you're the next big thing, but we're still running this backstage right now. But it also makes Brock look like a monster, because he's staring down the people that ran WCW for the majority of WCW's time. So it does good things for NWO and Brock here.
Yeah, exactly. Just to see him in the same frame as guys who are of that stature, I think is, you know, because at this point, he hasn't even been around for 6 months at this point. So it's a pretty big spot for him to be juxtaposed with them, for sure. Okay, so we head out to the ring now, and we get the newly introduced Chris Nowinski, who was debuted last week as in acquaintance of William Regal, and he's going to be taking on Spike Dudley here. He comes out in his khakis and his button-down shirt, which kind of look awkward because to me they seem like clearly oversized, like he was going to strip them off. Like his pants look like 14 sizes too big. Like you can kind of tell that he's going to take them off and reveal his tights. He has like no belt and stuff. So,
and that's actually something I noticed a couple times with Nowitzki, and then later with Eddie and Flair. The style in early 2000s was just stupidly big shirts and khakis.
Yeah, it definitely was not form fitting back in 2002. Yeah. It was almost zoot suit esque, I would say. So we start off, Spike comes in hot until he kind of gets the sort of scrappy face start to the match, who gives a little bit of offense on Nowinski, but then he gets tossed out the ring. I did pop because Spike does his Spike Dudley version of the coup de grace, which is not quite as spectacular as Finn Balor's, but he kind of does a top rope stomp thing. And he starts making his little comeback, but eventually Chris Nowinski wins with his full Nelson bomb, which unfortunately did not land extremely well to me.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks for him, because it's kind of, if anything, that's what you want to land well as a new guy in a glorified squash match, is you want to, you know, hit your finisher and make yourself look good. I did not think this was a particularly impressive debut for Chris Nowinski. Partially because he did sell a good bit in this, but just none of his stuff looks super good. Like I said, his finish didn't look great. I want a star on it, but I wasn't blown away by his in-ring debut here.
Yeah, similar things. I want a star and a half with it. It was good seeing, like, they talked about how he was the tough enough guy. So he's coming in, this is his first match. I get that someone like Spike Dudley, who's been tag team champ, worked with the Dudley Boys, all that, could try to put up a little fight against just this debuting tough enough guy. So from that aspect of it, I'm glad it wasn't just a straight squash, because you're still trying to play up the fact that this was reality TV show guy, tough enough, WWE's little reality show, so he's not the best in the ring yet, but he's still was dominant, threw Spike Dudley out of the ring, threw him into the steel steps pretty hard. If he had just hit the finisher at the end, it would have been a little better. And I was still trying to figure out what the finisher was supposed to be, because the way they landed it, it looked like it was going to be like some full Nelson into a side effect type thing, which would have been cool if he hit it right, but it was a botched finish.
Yeah, I think on commentary they called it like a full Nelson bomb, but it definitely didn't come off the... Yeah, I get what you mean. Like, he almost looked like he was going to turn with it at the end, like he was going to do something else, but yeah, it didn't really click. So, a tough debut for Nowinski, but... and I didn't mention, but Bradshaw comes in after the fact and goes after him based on what happened last week with him sort of getting screwed over.
Yeah.
And so I guess we'll see if that develops into anything. It may or may not, depending on how they feel next week. And so we next up, we have a Ric Flair promo. He heads out to the ring. He says that he needs to take a look in the mirror. Says that he let ownership go to his head and he became an asshole, which I like that they didn't bleep asshole and he just kind of came out and said it.
Yeah.
But he said he didn't go home like Austin did. And so this is another Austin dig here saying he didn't go home like Austin. We lost to Vince. And then he mentions that he's looked at Hogan's sort of comeback in this time frame and says that he can't let Vince be sort of his last match getting beat by Vince McMahon. So in a way, indirectly declaring his return as sort of an in-ring performer rather than a backstage entity or an authority figure. Mm-hmm. And he says that before he says goodbye, that he's going to show Brock that he's the dirtiest player in the game. And sort of like you mentioned earlier, Lewis, him sort of name dropping Brock is just another way to put Brock over subtly. You know, that Flair's mentioning his name. He just had a stare down with Nash. So you can kind of tell that I mean, it's pretty obvious going into this, but just rather than just in matches, even now guys are mentioning Brock, Flair's mentioning him. They're really trying to put him in a lot of big spots. Before we get to the next aspect of this, what did you think of the solo Flair part of this?
So I thought it was an interesting thing to do to have him come out and announce that he's going to be returning to a more in-ring spot. One of the things was when he said that he was talking about he had one last good run left in him, and I had to chuckle at myself knowing that this isn't even close to his attempt at a last run. But I mean, at this point, Flair can still go in the ring. And so it's not unbelievable that he could have a good run out of coming back right now.
Yeah, and I think for what they're doing, you know, when you get a retcon as much as they've had to here, and like so you have Flair who kind of comes in as sort of a face authority figure, then he sort of turns heel on Austin, and now Austin's obviously gone. They know Austin's not coming back anytime soon, so you kind of want to turn Flair face again because the crowd. You know, it's an easy guy. It's like they're trying to capture the same thing they did with Hogan. So I thought for those purposes, as sort of inconsistent as it's been over the last few months, I thought it did an effective job of turning him back face. You know, him admitting that he was being an asshole as owner and he let it get to his head. It's sort of like, you know, you're trying to retcon it quickly, but for what they had to do, it kind of makes sense to me. I think people want to cheer veteran old guy Flair like they did old guy Hogan. So it makes sense enough. But so the next part of this, so as he's in the ring, Austin's music hits to a fucking enormous pop. Like the crowd just loses their fucking shit to this. And then to a great heel moment, he comes out and it's Eddie Guerrero, which is awesome. Well, what did you think of that moment, Lewis? Because I thought it was awesome.
They could not have picked a better person to be the fake out than Eddie Guerrero. It just so perfectly fits him. And I busted out laughing for probably a solid minute at that. It was just so perfectly Eddie.
Yeah, and it's the first time on the show, and we'll see it at the end of the show, where it's like you're thinking like, oh man, they shouldn't have done that. Like, that's, you know, like they're trolling people. But then when Eddie comes out, you're like, okay, I got it. That's fine. I'm totally cool with you doing the bait and switch there. And it makes sense because they were, you know, they had a budding feud going. But Eddie comes to the ring. He says that we've heard that music for the last time. He says that he was set to whip Austin's ass, and he speaks about how big the match was, which I felt like that part of the promo was sort of like a, you know, he's semi-shooting there, because this was something that even Meltzer mentioned in the news of like, you know, that was a repercussion of Austin walking out, is that, you know, Eddie was set for a big feud with him, Eddie and Benoit anyway, and, you know, they're kind of getting hurt by this because they're kind of left hanging. So it's kind of like this promo, he gets into that, which I thought was interesting, saying that this is going to be the biggest match of his career, and that, you know, now he's kind of left hanging. But then he mocks Flair and says that Flair's the reason why he's not going to have his match with Austin, because Flair drove him away, and then calls Flair a worthless piece of crap. So the second segment of this, Logan, sorry.
That's Lewis. Tag team partner.
Yes, exactly. What'd you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see Eddie come out and shine a light on his career and say, hey, look, Austin's screwing me here. I was going to go into King of the Ring and beat him and really just show that I'm much more than the cruiserweight I was in WCW. I'm here to play. This is going to be my stage, and Austin's kind of sweeping the carpet out from under me right now.
Yeah, I love this swag in this promo. I thought he looked awesome. He was, to me, almost the highlight of this whole promo. Just the way he was speaking, he was full on Eddie. He had that, that like tan vest on, which is like absurd, but awesome.
And he could tell like he was kind of trying to, I don't want to say Eddie was nervous in it, but he was kind of leaning heavily on dropping essays and Holmes's to kind of like get through the promo. But I mean, he was still electric, and you could tell passionate about what he wanted to be able to do at King of the Ring.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he nailed it, but, we go to the next part of this. So now Benoit comes out and he kind of confronts Eddie and starts defending Flair for Flair's actions. He says he mentions the four horsemen and throws up the four fingers to kind of defend Flair again. Eddie again says that Flair's a loser. Flair says that he will take Austin's spot at King of the Ring, basically challenging Eddie to a match at King of the Ring. Eddie accepts. And then at some point, I think he spoke in Spanish, but I heard Madre, so I assume he's insulting Flair's mother, I think. I'm not sure, but I did hear Madre something there. And so Benoit then turns on Flair also, which is a semi-little swerve because he had been defending Flair. And so as they're both sort of starting to gang up on him, Flair hits him, and they start to attack him. And they do a pretty nice little beat down here where they put him in the figure four. And Benoit can't really do any in-ring stuff because he's still injured, but he's sort of taunting him and stuff like that. But I thought for as long as it was, this is a pretty solid segment, the way it elevated Eddie. And I thought Eddie was really good. I thought it justified why Flair had turned and stuff like that. The way they took the real-life Austin stuff and sort of integrated in the storyline. I thought for, you know, we talked last week about sort of giving them a little bit of leeway for having to call this on the fly and come up with this stuff. And I thought this was another example of that. You know, when you have to retcon everything Flair's done in the last 3 months with Austin and sort of restart them, I thought for what they had to do, they did a pretty good job here.
Yeah, and just to kind of crystal ball it here a little bit, this Eddie and Benoit promo here, if you just look down the road at what these two are going to do over the next couple of years leading up to WrestleMania 20, and what we know happens with both of them at WrestleMania 20 when they walk out as both the champs for their respective shows, you can kind of look back to this night and say, okay, Austin walked out. Vince said that they need to develop some new stars here. And then they have this segment with Eddie and Benoit beating down one of the biggest legends of all time, Ric Flair, you can kind of see it as, okay, these might be the guys.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, maybe the Austin stuff, not having Austin there to feud with, maybe stopped them being elevated, but you can clearly see they're on the rise. That's a good point. I didn't think about that. But it's sort of a long-term way of looking at it, which is, yeah, I definitely think, especially Eddie here, man, I can't get over it enough. But he came off like a star in this segment for sure. But we continue on, and we have Chris Nowinski now backstage putting over his Harvard background to Vince in Vince's office, which has become a mainstay of these shows, Vince in his office. And I pop very hard here because we get Vince getting a call from Tony Garea, and just just hearing Tony Garea mentioned on TV in 2002 just lit my fuse here, peeled my potato. And so he talks to Tony Garea at the airport, and he says that Tony Garea has seen someone at the airport. They say it must be Stone Cold. And so now Vince is anticipating Stone Cold being here. So he calls security, says he wants security. He wants a camera crew exactly for this moment to watch Stone Cold. And then he has Sergeant Slaughter there, and they're waiting in anticipation. So again, we see more integration of Stone Cold into the storyline.
Yeah, and for me, like, this is my first time actually, like, watching through it on the network, catching up with everything that happened in 2001, 2002, into the beginning of the Attitude Era here. So when this started happening, I didn't know who it was going to be. I knew it wasn't going to be Stone Cold because I knew enough that he wasn't around for a little bit here. So I didn't know who it was supposed to be. So it was kind of just as someone watching through this part of the network for the first time on a watching every show basis, it was interesting to kind of have that mystery behind it. This is something I actually don't know what's going to happen at the end of this night.
Yeah, same here. I kind of, when it happened, I kind of knew. I was like, oh, yeah, of course. But even in this moment, I was like, I didn't know where they were going with it. So I thought it was shrewd, you know. It was a good kind of you know, like cliffhanger to see who was going to show up. Who did Tony Garea see at the airport? But anyway, so we go to our next match, which is going to be a mixed tag match, which this has to be the only time these two teams have tagged. We have D'Lo Brown, who's going to be tagging with Trish Stratus versus Molly Holly and Crash. And so my first reaction here was like, oh shit, D'Lo is still here. He hadn't moved on to Japan yet.
Oh, yeah. This was pre-Japan World Heavyweight Champion D'Lo Brown, man.
Yeah, we're pre. So D'Lo's still here, tearing up on Sunday Night Heat, which is where this match apparently stems from, is altercation between he and Crash on Sunday Night Heat, which was an amazing moment that they show where Crash tells D'Lo, who was on commentary on Saturday Night Heat, I'll give you more than what you got, which, what the fuck does that even mean? Which JR says on Raw, he says, we need somebody to translate for Crash because whatever the hell he's talking about, I don't know, or something like that, which was really funny. I give you more than what you got, which I don't know what the hell he's trying to tell D'Lo. But anyway, this whole match was pretty much just an excuse to have Molly and Trish interact without having to put them in a one-on-one match because, you know, Crash and D'Lo are probably the lowest guys on the totem pole right next to Planet Stasiak.
Yeah.
The worst part of this is that King, which we haven't mentioned him much because I don't even want to talk about him, but here he gets a chant going of she's a fat ass for Molly. And I was just like, oh, Jesus Christ. But anyway, D'Lo wins with a powerbomb. It was an okay match. Like I said, really, I felt like the whole point of this was just to have Molly and Trish throw a few blows without having to put them in a match together. The Molly being, you know, talking about her ass stuff is just really old and sucky.
Yeah.
And really depressing to watch. And part of me is like, you know, is this looking back on 2020 eyes? But part of me thinks that even at the time, this is kind of stupid. I want a star of the match, who might be generous, but, you know, not the greatest. I get that they want to put them together, but the match was not the greatest, and the King stuff just sucked ass.
Yeah, same. It was very stale. It was very boring for me to watch it. Again, what you were saying, it was just so Molly and Trish could be in the ring but not have to be in the finish itself, so they can still build towards their championship match. The only real shining spot I can give this match is D'Lo does always hit a pretty impressive finish with his sit-out powerbomb thing he does. So that's the one good thing I can give it, is at least D'Lo, if he can do anything, he can hit that one finishing move.
Mm-hmm. This is before Japan drained all his, you know, he went through the ringer in Japan, Lewis. So
yeah, after Japan, it's all downhill, man.
Which apparently Japan, he had a lot of sushi, so deep fried sushi. But anyway, the thing too is that they do a pretty good angle. I have to, a simple but effective angle where Trish smacks her head on the announce table, and you know, I thought that was pretty good because it kind of sets up for the pay per view that's coming up. You know, I'd assume they're probably going to work some kind of injury angle where Trish is maybe like beat up a little bit. But it's just like, I wish they would just roll with that more, because I just don't know what they're thinking with this. You know, Molly has a fat ass thing. It's just so, and especially nowadays, because I feel like the tides have turned on that. You know, like, I feel like who in 2020 is going to be faulting Molly for having a fat ass, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a pure face move in 2020.
Yeah, it was a good thing with her, like, pulling Trish off the, I think Trish was standing on the apron and she pulled her off and into the announce table. Is that what happened? There's something like that.
Yeah.
So, it was kind of a nice little hard bump for Trish to take going into Sunday, and maybe this will work its way into the match itself.
Yeah, it's like, and I keep going on, but just frustrating. Like, it's like they have no confidence in them to just have a regular feud and a regular match, you know, that they have to put some dumb shit with the fat ass thing on it. Like, even though it's been, when they let it breathe, it's been a pretty good feud, but they just, it's like they don't let it go. But anyway, we cut to Lita, who got injured on the set of Dark Angel a few months ago. And so we get an update from her. She has a hurt neck and she wants to be by Matt's side. Not much to speak about there. And then we cut to Vince's office again.
Well, there is some stuff to speak about that, but it won't be for a few years.
Yes.
Because this is the neck injury she had that is similar to the one Edge gets when they start talking to each other.
Yeah. True. Yeah, it would come to fruition later on for sure.
Yeah.
But here it's just kind of her talking, and especially because Lita is not the greatest interview at this point, or maybe ever. But
based on her Hall of Fame speech.
So we get Jackie Gata, recent Tough Enough winner, and she meets Vince at his office, says she hasn't signed with SmackDown and she wants to be on Raw. She says she will be in the Divas Undress segment next, I think they said Tuesday. So I guess this must be its own like program, which is interesting. But Vince here still working his Harvey Weinstein gimmick that he seems to like to work on these shows.
Is it a gimmick
shows.
Though?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Yeah, these kind of things definitely are the worst, well, not the worst thing that's aged for WWE, because there are a lot of things that have aged worse, but this is definitely up there. These kind of segments and hype for not women's matches, but women's contests like this. So, yeah.
Yeah, surely Vince making the moves on his very much younger female employees ages like, like fine milk, for sure. But we carry on and we get Undertaker versus Matt Hardy. This stems from, you know, what's been going on between the Hardys and Taker. This is basically Matt defending his brother Jeff here. So not much of a match here. Kind of pretty much a squash. Taker hits a running choke slam, I called it, because it's sort of like Matt's coming off the ropes. He hits him with a choke slam. But while he's doing that, Jeff runs in. But while Jeff comes in to help his brother, Raven comes in and takes out Jeff, which leads to a big boot to the last ride. Like I said, not much of a match. I do find it kind of weird that Raven's involved. I know they had the match earlier tonight, but it's just odd that when they're really pushing this Hardy Taker stuff that they would even put Raven involved in any way. What's kind of odd to me.
Yeah.
But this is kind of more about the post-match segment where Raven handcuffs Jeff to the ropes and then Taker sort of does a beat down while Raven holds Matt down. He's kind of screaming. I think he had him in like an arm bar or something, some kind of submission, so Matt couldn't move. And so Matt's kind of screaming for his brother to try and help him, but he can't. And while Taker's beating him down, which I thought that was, you know, a lot better than the match. The match was really not much, but I did like the beat down, which is sort of Taker's strength at this point, is to just kind of beat guys down. So I like that, but the match itself, I want to star on it really more about the angle than the match.
Yeah, same. I want to star in the match just because it was pretty botched. The Irish whip, choke slam. I don't know if I think it was Matt's fault. He just didn't jump into it right. So he kind of just kind of fell down into the choke slam, and it didn't look great at all. But it was all about the after the match stuff, handcuffing Jeff to the ropes and just having him have to sit there and watch Taker and Raven work on Matt. So, yeah, it was a good way to double build this storyline, having it happen twice in a night. Because sometimes that can get kind of boring when you're like, okay, you've already seen these guys. Let's move on to some other stuff, develop some other stuff. This actually, for me, didn't start to get stale or boring. I want to continue seeing what's going to happen with Taker and Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, and it's a good way to, you know, because he's feuding with Triple H, and that's obviously a title feud, but you kind of want to have your champion on Raw, and you want to give him something to do and establish his heel character. I think this is a pretty solid way to do it, so I agree. And so Taker heads to the back and says that, this is what happens when you mess with him, blah, blah, blah. He hopes Triple H is watching. Yeah. And then we get Heyman telling Earl that he does not endorse any interference. So it's basically Heyman trying to make sure Brock doesn't get disqualified in his King of the Ring match. And so Earl says, you know, the typical ref line, you do your job, I'll do mine. Kind of thing.
Which, I mean, Heyman's not wrong here.
Yeah. Like,
as far as, like, story purposes go, Heyman is trying to explain, hey, Brock does not need any help here. If the match is interfered with, it's not Brock's fault. Yeah. Heyman's 100% right to be asking the ref to think about this and his decision-making.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to hear a heel kind of argue, like, no, please, I don't want any interference. Like,
yeah. And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier with having dominant heels instead of just people that are made fun of. Brock is a dominant heel. Like, he does not need the extra help. He doesn't need to cheat. Heyman just wants him to be able to go out there and kick ass.
It's true. And it makes sense for Heyman too as a manager, because he wants the best spot for his guy, and he knows if he loses, he's not gonna get any further in the tournament. Which, yeah, I agree. It's a nice little subtle thing, you know. But feeding off of that, we go to our King of the Ring match between Booker T and Brock, which we get actually Kevin Nash and HBK on commentary, which they are just fucking goofing off the whole time. Like, this, it reminded me of like a throwback to the early NWO when like Nash and Hall would get on commentary, or even like DX when they would get on commentary, because they were just like going full. I'm trying to, like, at one point Sean says that when Booker T hits the scissors kick and starts hitting his kicks, he says it's gimmick infringement, which is kind of funny, which I know some people would say he's an asshole, but I thought it was pretty funny for what it was. But so we get there's a ton of interference in this match where it's like you can barely focus on even what's going on in the match, which was essentially just Brock sort of dominating Booker T, which I thought was a little weird as far as, you know, I hate Bubba Ray Dudley, and he's been way more competitive against Brock. I would like Booker to get a little bit more. Booker sort of gets a little bit of a comeback sequence where he starts hitting his kicks, but for the most part, it's sort of Brock dominance. Big Show gets on the apron at the end, and then Brock hits the F5 to win it. So it was okay. Pretty basic match. Beat down. Booker gets his hopes by, and then we're done. But like I said, there was a lot between the commentary with Nash and HBK and then Big Show coming out on the apron. And even Goldust comes out at one point. It was hard to really focus on what was going on in the match. I want a star on it because it really wasn't much of a match, actually.
Yeah, I bumped it up a little bit just for the storyline feeding into the match. I went 2 stars, mainly because, like, you kind of have to give Booker the notice of, all the NWO are staring at him right now and could jump him at any minute, so that's throwing him off his game. Goldust comes down to try to help, which kind of builds his storyline with Booker some, and Brock does hit a really good F5 to win it. So I bump it up a little bit, and like what you were saying with Nash and HBK, they are kind of assholes, but they're fun assholes to listen to on commentary. Mm-hmm. So even with the Big Show Xbox distraction stuff going on, Nash and HBK kind of did give some levity to the moment, and it was fun to just listen to them trash talk the whole time.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it, but I guess I just know there are some HBK haters.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not one of them. But anyway, we get by the end, NWO beats down Booker T and Goldie, continuing that sort of storyline. But then we hear that Tony Garea is in the parking lot. the greatest words ever said. And so Vince says to tell Steve to come to the ring, anticipating Stone Cold is going to be coming. So Vince comes out to the ring. Tony Garea comes out to the ring. So again, I just popped because I've been hearing about Tony Garea this whole night. And he gets a main event segment in a 2002 Raw. I get to see Tony Garea come to the ring. And he tells Vince that it's not Austin. And so Vince says, it's not Austin. Who is it? And then cue the Rock's music, and the Rock comes out to an enormous pop. And like we said earlier, with the Eddie moment, I think even this is even more. It's like, I was just thinking, because like you said, Lewis, I didn't really remember. Once it happened and Rock came, and I was like, well, fucking course it was Rock. Like, what else would they have done? But I was sort of like, you know, what are they going to do here? And I was like, there's no way this would come off. Like, I feel like anything else they would have done would have been a popcorn fart. But Rock's return totally made up for it, because everybody in the crowd immediately forgets that they're waiting for Stone Cold and they're just jacked because it's the Rock's return. So I thought this was a really shrewd move. It was really smart, I thought, of the company and Vince to have Rock, who has been out for a few months, to kind of have that ace in the hole, like, call. Because I'm pretty sure at this point, I think he even mentions in the promo, but Rock wasn't supposed to be back for a little while later than this. But I'm sure they kind of called him and were like, look, when, you know, Austin walked out, we need something. Can you come in and do this? And he obliged. So I thought it was a pretty good ace in the hole for them to have Rock just show up here. But it was a really cool moment. Before we get in the promo, what'd you think of just the moment, Lewis?
The moment was perfect. They have this giant hole that needed filling, and Rock is the company guy to come in and fill that hole. And the pop was phenomenal. The crowd instantly, like you said, forgot about Austin, and it is now just the Rock show. And B, this is the Rock back on Raw, where before he left to do the movie, he was the SmackDown guy. So you're not thinking that, okay, Rock's going to come back to Raw and be the face of Raw again.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And he hadn't been there in a long time, you know. And he immediately comes out. He says, do you think Austin would come down the ramp? And he does his "it doesn't matter" line. He said, and then he goes into kind of that everyone is here because they want to. Everyone in the locker room is here because they want to do it. That they're doing it for the company, that they're all part of this company. It doesn't, if you don't want to be there, get the F out. Then he announces that he'll be a King of the Ring. He goes into his lineage with his father and his grandfather and that sort of thing. He says that Austin can take his ball and go home, but to him, this is home. And that's sort of how he ends the promo. And I kind of say this all the time, especially in this podcast, is that I know that Rock sort of gets shit sometimes because people will say that his promos are all about his catchphrases, which he obviously gets his shit in as far as the catchphrases go. But I do sort of feel like he is a guy that when he knows he's going to be cutting a long promo like this or like some kind of feature promo, he kind of knows what his through line is or what his theme's supposed to be. And he kind of stuck to it here. Like in here was all about, you know, sort of loyalty to the company and his lineage and, you know, the pride of a wrestler, not walk out on your job and stuff like that. And to me, he kind of stuck to that. And I always kind of liked that about Rock's promos. And I think the notion that his promos are all about his catchphrases is a little unfair because I think he is a guy who goes in knowing what his overall message is supposed to be. And I thought this is a really good promo. And it didn't even bother me that I know a lot of people say he came out here and buried Austin, but to me, it didn't seem like he was burying him because they are such rivals, you know? Their history is that they've always been rivals. So to me, it made sense for him as a character to come out and sort of, you know, give it to Austin a little bit because they've always have been rivals throughout, you know, since Rock arrived, that they've always been rivals. So it didn't really bother me that much. So I thought this was a really awesome promo to finish the show for sure.
Yeah, same. And Rock didn't miss a beat. And regardless, like what you'll say with his catchphrases, the fans at this point love the catchphrases. And still today, when Rock comes out and throws out the catchphrases, everyone in the arena is repeating them back to him. So you can say you don't like them, but for fan engagement, for getting the audience participating in something, would you rather them be saying, and millions back with The Rock, or would you rather them be booing Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns at the main event of WrestleMania? Because like those are your two options. You either have happy, excited, participating fans, or you have angry, bullshitting, mad participating fans. You don't get an in-between there. So I would rather have fans joining along, listening, participating back with the chants than fans booing and hijacking the show. And Rock came back. He hit his stride doing the, you have 15 seconds to get out of my ring. It doesn't matter what you think. That was fun Rock promo. And he stole the show. He stole the spot that Austin had. And he is going to run with it. This is the Rock show now.
Yeah. Agreed. Extremely shrewd move of them to get Rock to come back at this moment. But so that's how we end the show. So I think this was a weird show because I thought it had the moments to me were bigger than it as a show as a whole. Like I thought they had some good moments to build up a few things, and the Rock return was really awesome. It was a really fun moment. But otherwise, I thought a lot of the show was a lot of filler. So I kind of went, you know, like I thought the Flair promo was interesting to see how Flair's going to, you know, kind of turning face and how they're going to roll with that angle. Basically, everything to do with how they handled the Austin stuff I found was interesting. But a lot of the rest of the show was sort of, you know, middle of the road, ho-hum sort of stuff. So with that, I kind of went down the middle on the whole show and went 5 out of 10. What'd you think, Lewis, on the whole show?
Same. The matches weren't great, but I did think the backstage stuff, the storyline building, and the return of The Rock boosted it enough to get above average for me. I gave it 6 out of 10, but it was a big part of that 6 out of 10 was The Rock carrying the surprise at the end on his shoulders.
Yeah, for sure. It's a huge moment. Yeah. But on that, we will, you know, go right into our second episode, which is SmackDown. So this will be the June 20th, 2002 SmackDown. And so to start the show off, we get Kurt Angle out, and he has his wig again, despite being de-wigged last week and exposing his bald head. He comes on the wig again, and he says he knows that everyone's been laughing. And what he's going to say is very difficult, but he has to admit it to everyone. I am bald, and I'm wearing a wig, which obviously everyone has known for quite some time now. They show the footage of him getting the wig ripped off last week in a nice moment. They put like a really absurd black box over his bald head when he's getting the wig ripped off. But then he pivots and says that Hogan is a real joke. And then a nice corny joke. He says that Hogan is 100 years old and can't move, which I thought was an amazing comment. Like, just a nice, simple, amazing angle insult. And he says that at King of the Ring, he's going to embarrass him and make him cry and tap. What'd you think of Angle coming out hot in this episode?
I mean, I love it. And that's the thing. Like, Angle's the heel here. But at the same time, you can't help but laugh because he's so damn funny. He's just so good at taking these really whiny, complainy heel moments and just getting people to laugh. That's a thing that you don't always have the heel do, is get the crowd to actually enjoy watching them. Because a lot of times it's just supposed to be about booing, but when you can get laughs instead of boos and still get across the point that you're the heel in this scenario, in this storyline, that's more power to Kurt Angle for being able to do that, to maintain being the heel and still be just the funniest person to watch all night.
Yeah, and he still gets heat too, which is awesome. Like, he can come out and be... Like, I just think he's such an awesome character. Like, he's easily, like, a top three character that they have here. Mm-hmm. Like, he just so well plays the, jock kind of asshole sort of guy. And, like, he's trying to make jokes, but he's not that creative. So all you can say is that Hogan's old and bald, like, because he can't think of anything better to say. It's just funny. Yeah. But Hogan comes out now. He says that this old man's going to kick Angle's ass. He says he's going to take off Angle's ugly wig. So Angle tells him to try and take off his wig. He goes to punch him. Angle blocks the punch. Hogan goes for the big boot. Kurt escapes instead of taking the big boot. The only thing about this that I did not like is, so, you know, Angle bails in typical heel fashion. But I was hoping after last week, when he got the wig ripped off and everyone saw his bald head, that he was going to come out a little more aggressive. And I feel like it's a hard thing to have to walk with Kurt, because he is sort of like a goofball heel at this point. Yeah. But I think he works best whenever he shows that he's a badass. And I was sort of hoping, and in the early parts of the promo, I thought that's where they were going with it, that he was going to kind of snap a little bit, that he got his wig ripped off. And so I kind of wish he wouldn't have just completely bailed out after the big boot. Like, I'd almost liked him to sort of go after Hogan a little bit more and show that he's sort of... You know, him getting his wig ripped off made him, like, kind of snap and go a little crazy. They didn't really do that, but still, it was fine enough, I guess, what they're going for. I think it all depends on how they pay it off at the pay-per-view, for sure.
Right, and that's always been, like, the kind of interesting dichotomy about Kurt Angle, is he's at the same time someone that can do this funny comedic stuff, but aggressive Kurt Angle is one of the most dominant things that WWE's ever put across. Like, when he is in the zone, angry, going at somebody, it is hard to script a better aggressive character than Kurt Angle can just be as himself. And I mean, that shows later in the night when he faces Taker later. Like, Kurt is just someone that can beat anyone in the ring if he wants to. If he's given the opportunity, he will take advantage and win a match just by being so better than anyone else in the ring.
Yeah, I think it's, and I don't blame them, because he is so good at the sort of comedic, goofy heel stuff, mm-hmm. that I don't blame them for putting him out there and letting him do that. It's just, it's a hard, you know, fence to walk, of like trying to make him still seem like a badass and do the comedy stuff. And I think they do it overall pretty well. This is one of the few moments where I was like, you know, I kind of wish he would have. I think it's just me knowing that he got the wig ripped off and wanting to see that sort of lead to a little more, like, a change in him.
Yeah.
But it's still an effective segment, I think.
Yeah, and I don't think the wig lasts much longer anyway. No. So this was kind of a good send-off for it.
Yeah. But anyway, we continue on. We get a quick segment of Stacy and Dawn Marie backstage, sort of continuing to... vie for Vince's attention, and this was basically just the hype, whatever. Divas, bra and panties, undressed, you know, cleavage fest they have going on for whatever this was supposed to air on Spike TV or something, or TNN, I think it was. But carrying on, we get a match between Rikishi and Christian. So the only thing I had to say about this match is that it was a match. It was more for the angle that ensues after the match. I really didn't have a lot of notes on what it was as a match. It was typical, what you see on these shows, like a TV match, where they kind of go through their typical stuff. And then finally, Rikishi gets the pin on Christian, but Christian has his foot on the rope, but the ref does not see. So Rikishi starts dancing after the fact. And then Lance Storm comes out to argue for Christian. And then he says that this is a trend of prejudice against Canadian athletes like himself last week when he got the pin count on him. He says that wrestlers and officials, the entire company, the fans, everyone is against Canadians. The world hates them. That the world hates America and they deserve it. America sucks. So overall, I didn't mind this at all. Like, I like the idea of putting him and Christian together because I feel like they're two underutilized guys. This gives them kind of like some heat and establishes them with a motivation and stuff. The only problem with this was that it just went way too long. Like, I just felt like he was just ranting. And I kind of lost interest after a while because I felt like he was saying the same stuff over and over again. And I really do love Lance Storm. He's not the greatest promo in the world. And I just felt like he didn't have enough. There was not enough there to justify like the 4 minute promo he cut after this match. I want to star on the match, by the way. So,
yeah, the match itself, I just want to star on. I had my favorite wrestler Rikishi in it. it wasn't a great match. The pop up cutter at the end for the finish for Rikishi was a good move. I don't remember actually. That being a finisher of his, so it was kind of a cool thing to just see and be like, oh, he won with that, even though Christian's foot was on the rope. And then Rikishi dancing after the match while Lance Storm was just yelling at the ref. Storyline purposes, it was kind of fun to get Rikishi out there to have some fan engagement and then to have Lance Storm and Christian do this rant about anti-Canadian bias, and you can see that it's building towards something. This is something that Christian and Lance Storm about to build, maybe a tag team, maybe a faction. We'll have to see down the road, but you can tell that it's not a one-off thing. This is something that's actually going to build to be something.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think they would give Lance Storm that long of a promo, bless his heart, unless they had something cooking.
Yeah.
So we head backstage and we have a Triple H interview. He says it's 3 days till he gets the title back. And then he starts to mention he and Billy's history going back to DX. He says they used to call him Mr. Ass. So kind of some, not the most heavy-handed, but definitely some homophobic jokes he throws at Billy here. Like, that he'll kick Billy's ass. He used to be, he talks about Billy and his quote unquote partner. And then he ends it with a lot of, I just put like a lot of I ams. I am the game. I am this. I am that. So I thought this was kind of like the promo that people don't like out of Triple H, where he's just kind of doing his, like his gruff voice and saying a bunch of stuff. I didn't think this was the most engaging promo ever. I got kind of bored with it after a little while. I don't know, something about his promos just doesn't connect with me. I don't know. How'd you feel, Lewis?
Yeah, I can see that also. Like, it was kind of fun that he was just, he wrapped his arm around the backstage guy. I don't remember what his name is.
I can never remember his name.
He was asking his questions for him and then answering them. That was kind of fun. But again, like, some of the stuff hasn't aged well, especially that this was the face supposed to be saying this stuff. But that's just something that you're always going to see with this era of WWE, is it doesn't age well. You just kind of have to take it for what it is at the time. But as far as promos go tonight, I wouldn't even rank this one above Lance Storm's.
No, and the thing is that, like, I feel like in this time period, it's like they don't do a lot of like you know, white meat baby face stuff. They feel like every baby face has to have a little Stone Cold in them where they can't be totally like happy-go-lucky. And I think it hurts some guys because it just doesn't play with their personality, you know? You know, and I think Triple H just trying to be edgy here, and sometimes when he tries to be edgy, it comes off a little flat, and I thought that happened here. But
I mean, it's the best and the worst of the Attitude Era, which, like, some of these guys, the edginess really makes them better. But for guys that you just kind of assume are assholes in real life, the edginess doesn't come across as fun and exciting and edgy. It comes across as, this guy's just an asshole.
Yes. Agree. But speaking of edgy, we go backstage and we have Nydia, who is smelling her boyfriend, Jamie Noble. She tells Noble that he will win and it makes her happy. And that she says if he wins, she will make him happy. Hint, hint. Noble can't wait to get back to the trailer park. And then Nydia reveals that she has the Hurricane's mask wrapped around her vag. So that's where we are.
Yeah. That's yep.
Yes, but I think this has been a solid undercard feud. I really like Nitty and Jamie Noble, especially like Jamie Noble. He doesn't talk a lot, but he's such an interesting guy when he finally does talk, and he just does this all like, yeah, I'm Jamie Noble, which always pops me. But we head to the match next, which is Jamie Noble versus Kidman. And the winner's gonna get a shot at the Cruiserweight title at King of the Ring. And Cole says on commentary that aggression turns Nydia on. So I guess that's what attracts her to Jamie Noble.
There you go.
So I thought this was a really fun match for the 3 to 4 minutes that they actually got. I thought they hit some cool high spots. I like the reversal of the Hurricane Rana to a power bomb, and then like Jamie Noble reverses it to a power bomb, and then he hits sort of like a bridge with it for a near fall, which was cool. Kidman hits like the midair drop kick, and then finally our finish is that Nydia pulls Kidman, allowing Jamie Noble to hit the Hangman DDT for the win. But for what they were given, for the time they were given, I thought this was a really well done match. I think Jamie Noble is a nice you know, is a little refreshing in the Cruiserweight division that they've kind of forgotten about. I think the character of Nitty and Jamie Noble has made them kind of remember that the Cruiserweight division is a thing. So, yeah, I went 2 stars on. I kind of enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I went 3 with it. Just because, like, even though the Cruiserweight division doesn't always have the greatest storylines, the matches are, for the most part, almost always entertaining, even if it's just like a Cruiserweight scramble match, because you still get fun spots and you still get like the finish of this match, that Tower of London Hangman DDT that he hit looked brutal. And sometimes you gotta take into account, like, yeah, they're the Cruiserweights, but a lot of times they're putting on the matches of the night. And even though the like storyline here is, oh, they took Hurricane's mask, he's trying to get it back, that kind of thing, the matches outshine the storyline here.
Yeah, it was really good. And since you said it, so Hurricane comes out after the match, he sneaks behind, he chokeslams Noble and retrieves his mask after the fact, which sort of sets us up for their match at King of the Ring, which I think has been pretty well built for something that they don't, you know, give a ton of time to. For an undercard match, I think it has a pretty decent amount of heat, and you can kind of expect a pretty good match out of those two. But
yeah, I would have done something a little differently here. I wouldn't have turned the lights back on with Hurricane without his mask. Have him come up, because at this point, while I was coming up behind Noble, Noble was wearing the mask that he had retrieved from Nydia's undercard. So he was wearing Hurricane's mask. It would have been interesting to have him sneak up, grab the mask off of Noble, put it on, and then hit the choke slam and the lights come up, just because, like, stick with the gimmick a little. He doesn't want to be out there with the lights on without his mask on, because he kind of stands there for a minute just holding the mask up unmasked. And when you're thinking about, you're a masked wrestler, just put the mask back on. You don't want to be center of attention with your mask off.
Yeah, or make that like the stip of the match. Like he puts his title up and they put the mask up, you know? Seems like kind of sort of wrecked itself. But I think that's just some things at this point that they don't think in that sort of, I guess, older kind of classic style of looking at things. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it should have been. I wasn't thrilled about it. I feel like you're kind of throwing it away by having him just show up out of his mask. You could have built it more, made it mean, you know, give it some stakes, like you said. But so next up, we have Triple H and Billy. So obviously, there's some history here from DX. So Billy sneaks him to start off the match. Rico and Chuck set a trap outside. And this is really sort of the story of this whole match is, you know, that they sort of have like a 3-on-1 on Triple H because they have Billy, Chuck, and Rico outside. And I even like Taz calling out that it's weird that Triple H would fall for it when he goes outside and, you know, falls for the trap of the Rico and Chuck. I thought that was a nice little touch there to have him mention that. He starts working his comeback. Triple H does. He gets cut off. And then finally he makes his comeback. He hits his signature stuff. And then hits the pedigree, of course. He gets the win. I thought this is like a basic formula match, but it was executed really well. It puts Triple H over for King of the Ring, which I guess you want to do. It kind of sucks that it has to be one of the tag champs losing, but at this point, they don't really think too much of the tag champs, so I guess it's not that big of a deal to them. So I went 2 stars on it. I did kind of like the little mini story of Triple H, you know, having to deal with all three of them and them getting into his head a little bit. So it was fine enough.
Yeah, same. I went 2 stars with it. One of the things I was thinking about in the match was that history with Billy being in DX. And I was just thinking to myself during the match, Billy's a tag team champion right now. But if you think about it, when you're thinking about the DX and the NWO guys, Billy is just kind of left out. He's mm-hmm. the odd man out of all this because NWO has their group on Raw. Triple H is going for the title. And Billy's a champion, but he just doesn't feel as important as everyone else in DX and NWO is right now.
Yeah, the tag division is just in the dregs right here. They just have nobody to... And so I guess that's why I thought Billy was kind of expendable, which sort of sucks. But yeah, I guess it makes sense that you would roll with it, you know. Why not have that threat if you can roll with it? But so after the match, we get Angle stops Triple H from getting Rico because he's chasing after Rico. But then Angle gets dumped. Taker comes in. He hammers Triple H. And so we get a spot where Kurt accidentally hits Taker with the chair, which I thought was a little weird because the way Kurt had to hit him with the chair was like, I didn't really understand because I'm pretty sure like Triple H was bent over or I'm trying to think. I think actually he had Taker in for the pedigree. And so he's going to hit Triple H with the chair and then he hits Taker, which it didn't really make sense because they were both in different positions, I guess what I'm saying. So it kind of looks like a goof. Like, how would you even hit Undertaker with the chair? It was in no position where if you were aiming for one, you would hit the other. But, you know, I guess what they were going for. But not the best executed spot they've ever done.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. It was kind of... I don't know if it was mistimed or just... It had to happen that way just so they could get the main event they wanted tonight is what it ended up being. But you could have done it a little better.
And it ends up being it's a weird thing because it obviously puts heat between Angle and Taker, which is odd to me that that's where you want to go going into the pay-per-view with your two heels going at each other. But I guess if you want the match, like you said, but yeah, it's kind of odd. It's an odd pairing, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't dislike this kind of time period where 3 or 4 different guys can all be going at each other at the same time. Because like over on Raw, Taker's feuding with the Hardys, and now over on SmackDown, he's dealing with Triple H and Kurt Angle. Like I don't dislike that there are many things going on at the same time aspect of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like it has a little more real feel to it. That makes sense, yeah. But we have backstage, and we have Stacy, who's with Vince. She's excited that Rock will be there. Just kind of a cheap plug that Rock's going to be at King of the Ring. Taker storms in. He's pissed off. Again, this is kind of a trope that they do. People storming into Vince's office. It's always either Angle or Taker or Jericho storming into Vince's office, pissed off about something that happens. But anyway, Taker wants Kurt Angle in a match. Vince is kind of hesitant to do it. He kind of says no at first, which, again, I said is kind of a weird match going into a pay-per-view to have, like, two of your top heels going at each other. But after that, we see the King of the Ring bracket. Any thoughts on this promo with in Vince's office, Lewis?
Yeah, honestly, this is something I miss about not having general managers on Raw and SmackDown, is this kind of like backstage grievance with the general manager or the guy that makes the matches type scenario going on. There are definitely some things that get in the way with general managers, like taking up a lot of screen time. But as far as like getting matches made and showing grievances backstage to a person in power, you miss that when you don't have it. And to like have this kind of situation where the champ's demanding a match and he's going to the guy that can make the match happen, it's something that's missed when it's not there.
Yeah, I agree. I've liked Vince in this role on SmackDown because, like you said, he doesn't really do a ton of like long-winded entering promos, but it gives you something to kind of bounce everything else that's happening on the show to kind of bounce off of. So I've kind of liked him, and obviously Vince is super entertaining anytime he's on screen. So
yeah,
I agree with you on that. That's like the good part is where they're not cutting 15-minute promos.
Right. If you're going to have the authority figure in the kind of like GM spot, keep it short, but keep it important.
Yeah. So we head to the ring. We get Jericho versus Val, which I want to say, this was a King of the Ring quarterfinal match as well.
Yeah.
The winner will face RVD at King of the Ring. And they kind of show the bracket here too as well. Which I kind of got a little pissy about in the last episode because I was like, okay, it's King of the Ring. I need to see the bracket. They haven't been showing the bracket, but here we kind of get a little bit of it. They're finally starting to remember, oh shit, this is happening in a week. We should probably push what's going to happen for King of the Ring. So Jericho's mostly on top versus this match, but Val kind of stays in it by avoiding all of Jericho's big moves. Like Jericho misses the lion salt as he does most of the time. And so Val kind of avoids a lot of the big moves to kind of keep himself in it. We get a ref bump, and then Val hits the fisherman suplex for what is a visual pin because the ref is out. And so they do that whole thing. Jericho gets a chair, which he seems to do in every match, whether it makes any lick of sense or not. He never really uses it. And we get a sit-out powerbomb by Val for a near fall. But then finally, Jericho works his way into the Walls of Jericho for the win. I thought this is a solid match for a 4-minute match. I didn't really understand why you need Val to get a visual pin on Jericho. Val's been completely just a throwaway. He's just been thrown in here when they need a guy in a spot. So I don't know why you need him to do that with Jericho. But as it was, I went a star and a half on it. It was a solid match for what it was.
Same. I went a star and a half. I liked But beforehand, they flash back to Jericho brutalizing Edge, and that's a rivalry that will continue on for the next decade or more. So it's cool to see the like beginning stages of that going on right now. But with what you mentioned with the visual pin, I hated that because like Jericho at the beginning of this year was the first undisputed WWE champion. He's the guy that beat The Rock and Stone Cold in the same night, and you have him, if the ref hadn't been knocked out, losing to the big Valboski in a King of the Ring qualifier or quarterfinal, whatever this was. Like that's just not a good visual for me. Like Jericho should still be one of the top guys in the ring for the company. I don't want to see Val Venus getting a pin. Even if it was the ref knocked out, like a visual 3-count on the champion. Or not the champion, but Jericho.
Yeah, because they're not doing jack shit with him either. Like, he's such a throwaway, Val is. So, like, why? What's the point? And it doesn't make any sense. But at least he won. But, yeah. So we get a replay of Rock's promo, which you can tell from this show that they're really pushing us hard for King of the Ring, that Rock is going to be on King of the Ring. Then we get Tess, who's speaking with Hardcore Holly because they're about to have a match. I honestly don't remember much of what they said. I think Tess just kind of ended with, like, I'm going to beat you, etc. Like, not the greatest promo ever.
The only thing I remember from that promo is Test was taping his hands up, but he was doing a horrible job of it. There was like, it was like bulging out everywhere. The tape wasn't taut on his wrist or hand. It was just kind of, he wasn't paying attention to what he was doing. He was trying to remember his lines for the promo, and he was just taping his hand up and messing it up.
Yeah, he kind of sucks, but... I'm not a huge Sass fan.
Same.
Yeah. So we go back, and of course, we have somebody complaining to Vince in his office. Angle complains because he doesn't want to face Taker. And so he says he's not afraid of him, and he just says that he's going to visualize that it's Hulk Hogan instead when he faces him later tonight. And so we head to the aforementioned King of the Ring quarterfinal match between Hardcore Holly and Test, maybe the least appealing of all our quarterfinal matches. So the whole story of this match is that Test sort of uses power on Holly for most of it until Holly can mount a comeback. Holly hits his signature dropkick, but Test hits his big boot out of nowhere to end it. This was the other one where I was just kind of like, this was a match. It was a match. It existed. Test won. So he goes on to the semifinals to be the one of these is not like the other guy in the last four of the King of the Ring tournament. I want a star on the match.
I bumped it up a little just because there were some really visually fun reversals that happened in this match. Like at one point, Hardcore Holly did a really cool like leg lace reversal into a pin. So just from the like technical aspect of it, it was a more interesting match than I thought these two were going to come out and put on. And then, yeah, Tess catching Holly with the big boot at the end was pretty nice. So I went a star and a half on it.
Yeah, fair enough. But that locks us up for our final four for the King of the Ring as Tess versus Brock. I wonder who's going to win that one.
Yes.
And Chris Jericho versus RVD, which is pretty, sounds like a really fun match. So we'll see how that plays out. Like I said, not a bad final four.
No, not at all.
Tess cuts a promo after the match, and like I just kept cracking up because he just seems like he cannot breathe at all during this promo. Like
he was just gassed.
He was so gassed.
Absolutely.
And he says that the next big thing will get the big boot, which is kind of corny. And then so Michael Cole, the classic Michael Cole line, which I know you mind Cole in these, like he hasn't really bothered me too much, but here he says, when Tess says that the next big thing will get a big boot, he says, ominous prediction. Which was like, how is that ominous?
Yeah, Cole and Taz are probably one of my favorite duos on commentary ever.
Yeah, I agree. I really like them, but that was just like, it kind of reminded me of modern day Cole to just say ominous, ominous prediction, even though it was not ominous in any way, shape, or form. But so we head back to Vince's office. We see actually a sighting of Fit Finley and Johnny Ace, which kind of popped me to see that Johnny Ace was around in 2002. He wants them to keep an eye on the main event. And then we get a very, very uncomfortable Stacy Vince kiss where she like, I feel like she like grazes his lips as like she does it like in the most like legally they kissed. And that is about all you can say because like, it was just like, she pulls away immediately. Like they just touch lips and moved away. So it was very awkward as fuck.
Yeah. That's just things that don't age well for WWE 101.
Yeah, the older boss making a move on his young female employees, you know, not the greatest look. But Jericho then says, we cut to Jericho promo. He says he will be ready for King of the Ring, and he says he wants it to be an all-Canadian final for King of the Ring. So I guess that would mean it would be Test and Jarko, which...
Yeah, I had to remind myself there just now that Test was Canadian.
Yeah.
I was thinking like, huh?
Yeah, which I'm sure the crowd would be thrilled if we got Test in the King of the Ring final, but
yeah,
doubtful. So we get a quick...
Though it was kind of a nice tie back, if you think about it, to Storm and Christian from earlier.
Yeah, really pumping the Canadian...
Yeah.
Yeah. The Canadian conflict with America has been raging for centuries.
Sir, our oldest rival.
Yes. We get a rundown of the King of the Ring card, which, you know, it's what happens on these shows. It's kind of like you go through and you're like, yeah, this is all right. And they run down the card and you're like, you know, this is a pretty solid card. Like,
yeah,
I could get into this with, you know, the King of the Ring stuff and then Hogan versus Angle. So it looks like a pretty good card. And then finally we get a Taker Angle confrontation in Vince's office. Vince tries to reason with him and says he wants a clean competition because they don't want anybody getting hurt. And they kind of push the idea that, Kurt wants to break Taker's ankle in this match. He says he wants them to shake hands. They don't really buy it, so they don't. They kind of go at each other. Vince kind of separates them. And again, it just seems sort of weird that this is your final match going into the pay-per-view is between two of your heels that are going against two of your top baby faces. Kind of an odd thing, but the main thing I popped for during this whole thing is that right after this, they show the WrestleMania 18 game for GameCube, which was pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah, when I saw that, I had to think about, I know I've played the game. I don't remember if that was the first one I played or if I played WrestleMania 19 first. But I definitely remember both of them, and I remember both of them being decently solid games.
Definitely throwbacks to the old Nintendo 64 games. But
yeah.
Which brings us to our main event, Kurt Angle versus Undertaker. Angle actually comes to the ring with a chair. In the early going of the match, he hits an ankle lock kind of out of nowhere, which is always sort of a fun spot. Taker gets out of it. He starts working over Kurt. We get a lot of hard-hitting shots. Like, Angle goes into the ring post, which I saw was a really sick spot. He counters the choke slam to a roll-up into the ankle lock, which, again, was another awesome spot. And this was just a real, like, balls-to-the-wall match, like real hard-hitting. Real hard-hitting stuff for both guys. Taker sits in the ankle lock for quite a while. He finally breaks it, which I thought was a little, if I'm going to nitpick, I thought that was a little hokey. Like, he sits in it forever and then finally, like, kind of twists out of and kicks Angle out of it. Mm-hmm. He hits a choke slam, but then it distracts from Triple H, allows Kurt to get the roll-up in the pin. Again, I really enjoyed this as a TV main event, all things considered. I went 2.5 on it. Again, it was real hard hitting, some cool spots in there. I really love that Angle when he counters the choke slam and hits the roll up. That was like the spot of the match for me.
Yeah, same. So I went actually 3.25 on it just because I thought this was a pay-per-view quality match on a go-home show before the pay-per-view, which normally they don't want to do a big match like that right before the pay-per-view, but... They were beating the piss out of each other the whole match. There was the exposing the turnbuckle spot, countering the choke slam into the ankle lock, and actually holding the ankle lock there for a bit. I thought this was a genuinely amazing match for being the main event with two heels before the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think and Taker really brings it when he's got, like, you know, opponents that bring him up to it. You know, when he's not facing puking Tommy Dreamer or whatever, like when he's faced on, you know, in this run, when he's faced like RVD or you know, Angle or some people, he really brings it. And he really has some pretty solid matches. And Kurt is just, you know, in this era, is just everything he does. It's hard for him to fuck up. And I thought, I agree with you. This is a really good main event. So I kind of see why they did sort of the kind of the juggling they did to kind of put them together, even though they're both kind of top heels and stuff. So
And letting Angle get the win is just gonna fire up Taker for the pay-per-view against Triple H. So that was another just pretty interesting, cool decision that they went with.
Yeah, I thought this was, and it was a good close to the show too, because after the match we get kind of like an all-out brawl to close out. So Hogan comes out, he and Triple H are against Taker and Angle, and then finally Triple H sort of stands tall to close the show. The good close to the show. So overall, I kind of thought this was, you know, not amazing or anything, but as SmackDown usually is, I thought this was a solid episode. It breezed by for me. Like, just, I thought the in-ring action was a bit better than what we saw on Raw. A little bit smoother. Maybe didn't have quite as, like, stuff that I would consider historic or memorable the same. But it came off more just like a solid wrestling show to build to a pay-per-view, to build up the feuds, build up the angles. You know, more of a breezy, good wrestling show. So I went 5 out of 10. Same thing as I went for Raw, but maybe for different reasons.
Yeah, and I gave this one 5 out of 10 also. The matches were better, but they just didn't have the backstage stuff that Raw did, the surprises that Raw did, and like those big moments where you want to see where things are going to go forward from there. I just didn't think the SmackDown had it as much as the Raw did, because Raw had obviously the big thing, Rock's return, but also Eddie and Benoit's stuff, Flair saying he's coming back to the ring, the face down backstage with Brock and the NWO. Like, all that stuff did a little more for Raw, and it was kind of left out on SmackDown.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree for sure. Raw had the bigger angles, absolutely, I would say. But so that wraps up both shows. We'll head to our awards by best match, and I think you're going to be on point with me on this one, Lewis. I had Angle Taker.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yeah, that was a good one. Best moment, I had The Rock return.
I also had The Rock return. I gave like, because that's just the obvious thing here. Mm-hmm. There was no better option, but I gave a kind of slight consolation to the Eddie Benoit stuff.
Yeah, that was a great one too. I was kind of stuck between both of those myself. Best show, I was torn because I had the same rating for both. I lean a little towards SmackDown just because I thought it was a little bit of an easier watch. But this is probably the closest since I started doing the pod where I was kind of stuck between the two, where I almost want to call it a tie, but I'll probably lean SmackDown, but this is pretty damn close.
Yeah, I leaned Raw for the backstage stuff.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, I could easily see it. It's kind of just what it, you know, it's more just like picking what you want to watch more. My LVP on this one, which again, I didn't think anybody that was on these shows was outright terrible as far as in ring. So I went with King for his Molly fat ass chant and, you know, his typical shitty ass commentary on these shows.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah.
I kind of went a different route with it. Even though he's not the least valuable person in the company right now, for these two shows, I went with Flair. Mm-hmm. And the reason I did it was, okay, he just lost his ownership side of stuff to Vince, so he's coming back out and trying to re-jumpstart his in-ring stuff, and then he gets beat down by Eddie and Benoit. So he's kind of just a bad week for Flair. So that's why I'm kind of awarding him the least valuable player for this week, just because of the stuff that's been happening to him.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I think that match with Eddie is going to be really, really important for him as to where he goes after this. You know, is he going to be somebody who's considered a viable in-ring performer, or like, where is he going to go after this whole debacle as being the owner, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, my MVP, I would Angle, because to me, he was the strength of the best match. In his promo at the beginning of SmackDown was awesome. He just kind of, unless anybody else gives like some amazing performance, Angle's kind of always locked in on these as the MVP for me.
Yeah, same. As far as Angle goes in this kind of stuff, he's the AJ Styles of our Highway to the Impact. So
exactly.
he's unless he just is not on the show at all, it's hard not to give him an MVP award.
Yeah, agree. So with that, I'll give my top five. So my top five performers on here are MVP, like you said, Angle, add Vince, Taker, Rock, and Eddie, which is interesting because I have two guys who, well, actually three guys who did not wrestle, which I think is indicative of these two shows, how heavy they were on, you know, promos and angles as opposed to matches. Mm-hmm. That I have three guys who didn't even wrestle that I considered the top five performers on these.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I see where you're going for with that. I kind of tried to go a little more mid-cardy with it because I was thinking more the standout approach to it because the main event guys are going to be the main event guys. So I kind of wanted to dig a little and find the standout mid-carders. So I went with Jeff Hardy for his stuff that he's doing with Taker, Brock for his stare down with NWO. I went Lance for his, even though it was kind of ranty, I can tell that something's going to come of that. So Lance Storm for his rage against America. and then for my final two, I did go Angle and Triple H for just going into King of the Ring. These are the two I'm expecting some big things for. I'm expecting Triple H to really give it to Undertaker, and I'm expecting Angle to show, hey, you're not just going to be able to make fun of me and take my wig. I'm going to break your ankle, Hogan, kind of stuff. So for my last two spots, I gave it to those two.
Yeah, it certainly seems like Angle. I mean, the way it's set up, you would think Angle just goes in there and destroys Hogan. Or at least wins, you know. Mm-hmm. But I honestly don't remember. And so I'll see what happens. And I try not to look because I like to be kind of, I like to react to the stuff that happens on these. But
yeah.
So that wraps us up, Lewis. These were two fun episodes. Thanks for coming on. Do you have anything to plug? I mean, I know we have TNA if you want to plug that.
Yeah, we have our TNA Highway to the Impact Zone show hosted by Logan Crosland. We're going through the very beginnings of the TNA weekly shows. We're still in the weekly pay-per-views right now, but those are going to be wrapping up down the road, and we'll be into the weekly shows with the ever so often monthly to every couple month pay-per-views that they do. But we're really getting into the beginnings of TNA and showing where they build, and that was one fun thing watching this Raw and SmackDown, where you can actually find a lot of highlights in the show, because early TNA it's a lot of trying to get in and really finding those good moments, because there's the start was kind of rough, but we'll get to those Impact shows that are really solid like this Raw and SmackDown were.
Yeah, and it's part of what I enjoy about doing both pods is that, you know, to see, and I know we're kind of a little bit further in TNA's run, but the timeline where we're at here on Ruthless Aggressive is right as TNA is firing up. So it's interesting to see, even though it's a couple years removed from each other, just to see where TNA and WWE are kind of in pretty much the same sort of era. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see to put those two against each other and see what they, you know, the strengths of each and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a great pod. Like Lewis said, check it out. We have a lot of fun on it. There's a lot of good stuff, but we also goof on a lot of the, you know, goofy shit of TNA, which is a lot of fun.
Equally as fun. There's a lot of goofy shit at the beginning.
Yes, absolutely. But other than that, for me, I'm on Twitter, Jumbly_Jake, as always. Check out everything we have here on the North South Connection feed. This week in the NFL is really rocking and rolling right now. I'll give a special shout to them. That's you know, John and Cowboy and Cowboy Senior. They're going through, they kind of preview the week of NFL action and break down the last week's NFL action. All amazing individuals and just the perfect. It's a quick listen. It's usually about an hour and change, and they just go through what's going on in the NFL. I enjoy it. They have a fun dynamic and just great guys to listen to. And besides that, on North South feed, you have tons of shows covering essentially every era of wrestling in the last, like, I would say 30 years, whether it be, you know, ECW in the mid-90s with Extreme Three-Way Dance, Wrestling Warzone, where Chad and JT are going through WCW and WWE during the Monday Night War. We have our own TNA podcast on North South Feed, where they're actually starting with TNA from the very beginning in 2002. We have The Year That Was that Aaron does. We have, I'm trying to think what I'm forgetting, but there's a ton of great podcasts. Just check it out. If you found this podcast, and I'm sure you know about all the others, check them out. They're awesome. But other than that, for myself and my wonderful guest, Lewis, thank you for coming on. I hope you had fun talking about the Go Home to King of the Ring 2002.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But other than that, I will sure have you back, Lewis. But thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. And bye-bye.
Drop it like it's hot.